And that's what we see in this first cartoon. Happiness is a feeling. It's an emotion. The same way you could feel sad, you could feel jealous, you could feel angry. So happiness is this emotion that everyone wants to feel. The question is, how do we actually achieve that happiness? And is that an actual sustainable goal? Could we really always feel that way that we want to feel? So there's a form of psychotherapy that started a number of years ago, but not too long ago. It's one of the more recent types of therapy, and it's called ACT. So ACT stands for Acceptance and Commitment Therapy. And pretty much what it really is all about, if you look at the acronym on the bottom, ACT, so A is accepting your reactions. So to not try to force yourself to feel a certain way, but to accept anything that happens, any emotion that you're having, you accept that and you're just kind of present with that emotion as opposed to trying to change how you feel. Then what you do is the C is you choose a value direction. So instead of trying to change how you feel, you choose to act a certain way. And that's also part of why it's called ACT, that it's not about trying to change how you feel. It's just trying to change your behavior and to do something meaningful despite how you feel. And then the T, of course, is the taking action once you choose once you chose what direction you wanted to go. So this is ACT. This was started by Dr. Stephen Hayes a number of decades ago. And then, in around, I think, 1994, Russ Harris, who's a mental health professional from Australia, so he wrote this book called The Happiness Trap. And that's what the title of tonight's talk is. And what we're going to go through next is really the premise of what The Happiness Trap is all about and why he calls it a happiness trap. So he actually goes through three myths about happiness that we all just kind of assume. I shouldn't say we all, but society often assumes these three things to be true, but as we're going to see, they're not actually true. They're really myths. So number one is that the natural state of emotions is happiness. So that pretty much means that our default as human beings is that by default we're happy, but every now and then some anger comes in, some sadness comes in, some jealousy comes in, but our default is to be happy. Just as a side note, I recently watched the movie Inside Out. So in Inside Out, it actually kind of makes this false assumption a little bit. It kind of assumes that joy, those of you who have seen the movie, that joy is the one who's kind of like running the show. And then the other emotions, sadness, anger, etc., try to get in the way of joy. So that, Dr. Harris points out, is a common misconception, as we're going to get to. So that's number one. Number two, second myth is that happiness is defined as feeling good. That happiness, as we're implying, is this emotion of, I need to feel a certain way. That's myth number two. And number three is that if you're not happy, you're defective. That there's something wrong with you. If you're not happy, you have to fix that. You have to, how could we help you feel better? Right? I'm sure many of you might have experienced this, that you're just having a bad day, something, you know, legitimately frustrating happened, something upsetting happened, and everyone around you was just trying to help you feel better and like trying to figure out how could we help her feel better? How could we make you feel good? And the underlying assumption of that, perhaps, is myth number three, that if you're not happy, there's something wrong and we need to fix it. So those are the myths. So what are the actual truths? And this is based on a lot of research, based on a lot of studies. This is not just his own idea. But number one, he says that the default does not have to be happiness. That our body is in a constant state of changing emotions. That there's no assumption that the default is happy and then other emotions come in. We're constantly in this flow of different emotions. And sometimes it's not just one emotion. Sometimes there are mixed emotions, which I'm sure we've all experienced. So that's the first myth that's debunked. The second myth is that happiness can also be defined not just as an emotion, as a feeling, but it's a state of being. And the way he defines it is living a rich, full, and meaningful life in which we embrace the experience of the full range of human emotions. So again, it's not trying to always feel a certain way, but it's an embracing, it's an openness to embrace all the emotions that human beings experience. And then number three is that happiness is not defective. Not being happy is often very normal. Life is hard and challenging, a lot of the time, and they're suffering, etc. And there's nothing wrong inherently of being unhappy. So that's those are the happiness truths that the happiness trap that the book presents. So now to get to the Mishmar part of tonight. So what does the Torah have to say about happiness? So if you look at the pictures, so you have, you know, the Nanach guys, you might have seen them in Israel, sometimes even in America, and they're quoting Rav Nachman of Breslov, one of the great Hasidic masters, who famously said, Mitzvah gedola lios besimcha tamid, that it's a big mitzvah to always be happy. So, first of all, is that actually true halachically? So I remember when I was Shana Aleph and Shalavim, it was like one of the first weeks, and I was at a shir, and the topic of the shir was the mitzvah of simcha, the mitzvah to be happy on the holidays, right? You might know, as we're going to get to soon, there's a mitzvah of v'samachta b'chagecha, you have to be happy on your festivals. So that was what the shir was about. And I remember very early on in the shir, I raised my hand, and I said, I don't get it. What, how could there be a mitzvah to be happy on the festivals? I thought there's a mitzvah to always be happy. Mitzvah gedola lios besimcha tamid. We have a mitzvah to always be happy. And the Rebbe and a couple of the more learned ones there started laughing. And I didn't know why they were laughing. But what the Rebbe explained was that it's not a halachic prerogative. It's not an absolute obligation that Rav Nachman is saying that you actually have a mitzvah to always be happy. And as we're going to see, when the Torah talks about trying to have this state of happiness, it can't be a constant. Or maybe there are two types of happiness. There's two types of simcha that the Torah talks about. So that's what we're gonna look into. So the first mitzvah that I was just referring to, the mitzvah of having to be happy on the holidays. So in the Sefer Achinach, you guys might have seen some of the mitzvah of Sefer Achinach, where he goes through the different halachos, the different laws of each of the 613 mitzvos, and he also goes through the reasoning behind the mitzvah. So when he talks about the reason for the mitzvah to be happy on the holidays, and the way to be happy is through eating and drinking and through buying and through buying each other things. So we try to do these physical things to make us happy. So what's the reasoning? So he says, Misharshei ha-mitzvah, V'pisha ha'adam nachon al inan shetzarech tiv'o l'smoach l'prakim. That a person's natural tendency is that every now and then we have to have that pleasure. We have to have that joy. Kamo, just like shutzarech al hamazon al kopanim, right? Every now and then you have to eat, right? In order for a human being to survive, you have to eat every now and then. Vel hamanucha, we also have to take a rest. Vel hashena, we have to sleep. So basically what he's saying is that the mitzvah of rejoicing and getting this feeling of happiness on the holidays through these physical means is there's a natural need. The same way that there's a need for a human being to take a nap, to go to sleep, to eat, so we also have a need to feel that happiness. And then he says, and once there's a mitzvah of being happy, v'ratzah ha'kel l'zuchusenu, anachnu imo v'tzom ariso, v'tzivanu la'asod ha'simcha l'shmo, l'ma'an niska l'fanav v'chol ma'asenu. That once there's this mitzvah once there's this need of a human being to have that joy, that pleasure every now and then, so Hashem connected it to the mitzvah of simcha on the holidays so that we can make that joy and that pleasure for His sake. So what's clear from the Sefer Achinach? So number one, what's clear is that the mitzvah of simcha is a mitzvah to have a feeling of happiness and of enjoyment. But that's the mitzvah of simcha on the holidays specifically. But what's implied from the Sefer Achinach is that it's not physically possible to have that state all the time. Right? He even says that every now and then a person has to make sure they have that joy, to have that physical pleasure, to have that quote-unquote happiness. But the implication is that it's not sustainable. It's not possible to have that happiness all the time. So this is one type of simcha that is the emotional experience, but it can't be that's what's required when we think of trying to always have simcha, to always have happiness. So what is required in that other type of simcha? So I think there are a number of sources that we could quote for this, but I think the one that really comes out the most clearly is actually pointed out by Rabbi Dr. Abraham Twersky Zatzal. You may have heard of him, you may have heard he passed away a few weeks ago, tremendous Talmud Chacham, He was a Hasidic master, and he was also a psychiatrist. He was one of the first really prolific writers that integrated psychology and Torah. So he points out in one of his earliest books that's called Let Us Make Man, which is all about developing self-esteem. So he quotes this Gemara in Brachos on Samach Amud Beis. And the Gemara is talking about, you may have heard this halacha, that just like there's a mitzvah to say a bracha on a good thing that happened, so there's also a mitzvah to say a bracha on a bad thing that happened. So what's the bracha we say on a bad thing? So unfortunately, lo aleinu, if a person loses a loved one, so there's a bracha you say, baruch dayan ha'emes. That's the bracha that you say when something bad happens. But the Gemara has a question. I'm not going to read the whole thing inside, but the Gemara has a question. And it says that if the bracha is baruch dayan ha'emes, then why does the Mishnah seem to say that we say a bracha of hatova ha'metiv, both on a good thing and on a bad thing, right? So it seems to be a contradiction. Is it Baruch Dayan HaEmes or is it Baruch HaTova HaMeitiv? So the Gemara answers, and this part I'll read inside, the last few lines, Amar Rava Lo Nitzricha El Lekablinhu B'Simcha. That no, really the bracha is Baruch Dayan HaEmes. That really is the bracha we have to say when something terrible, when a tragedy happens. But why does it say that? Why is it called also Hatova Hametiv? Because we have to say the bracha with an amount of simcha. So how in the world are you supposed to say a bracha of Dayan Emes with simcha? A person has a terrible tragedy that just happened, a terrible loss. They're grieving. How could you possibly say that you should do that b'simcha? So Rashi says something fascinating. He says, "What does it mean lekablinu b'simcha? Levarich almidas peranios belevav shalem." That you say a bracha on that terrible thing that happened, believe shalom, with a full heart. So how is Rashi defining simcha, says Rabbi Dr. Tversky, with a lev shalom, with an acceptance, with an ability to allow that emotion to actually be experienced, as opposed to trying to force yourself to feel a certain way and to say, no, I'm going to be happy, I'm going to feel that joy, even though something terrible happened. It's the ability to say, part of life is experiencing different emotions. And it's belev shalem. It's to be able to say that it's okay to feel sad right now. It's okay to be upset. That is simcha, which is it's so counterintuitive. As we think of simcha as I have to feel happy, I have to feel joy. But says Rashi, no, simcha is also a mindset. It's a state of being, of being able to experience any emotion. So then, if that's true, that the Torah has these two types of simcha. There's a type of simcha that we're required to do every now and then, like on the holidays, like on Purim coming up, that through physical pleasures we're supposed to have that emotion of happiness. But then also, there's the state of being of simcha, of being able to just have a perspective that the world is going to have different types of experiences and that there will be different emotions inevitably. So then how do we achieve that type of happiness? And again, this is going back to the happiness trap, and this is what he talks about. So the way that he answers this question, Dr. Russ Harris, if you look at the next slide, is through value-based behavior. So he explains that at the end of the day, we all have the values, we all have things that are important to us, and on this animation, you could just see a couple of them thrown out there: connection, love, family, creativity, respect, giving, patience. There are so many values that we could come up with. And that once we identify those values, so by doing things, by doing actions that are in line, that are consistent with those values, that's how we ultimately develop this type of happiness. And again, it's not about feeling a certain way. It's not about feeling this joy, this ecstasy, but it's about doing things that are in line with our values. And the more that we could do that, the more that we could have this other type of happiness. And one of the most important aspects of this is that, and this is when people come to therapy, this is usually what they're struggling with, that they're having all of these thoughts and emotions that don't make it, that are getting in the way of them doing value-based behavior. So we're not going to get into how the inner workings of this therapy works, but with one cartoon, it kind of sums up the whole thing. So if you look at this cartoon, and I often show this to my patients, that once you find what those valuable things are, what those activities are that are consistent with those values, then you walk towards that path carrying the balloon of anxiety, self-doubt, uncertainty, ugly memories. You kind of schlep it along with you, right? So if I have a patient that says, I really want to do well in school, I really want to be on time for class, I just like, and when I wake up in the morning, I just feel this heaviness. I feel this like, ugh, I feel so kind of just sad. I'm having all these thoughts about how I can't do it. So what do I say? I say, take all that emotion, take all those thoughts, put it in a box, put it in that balloon, and schlep it with you into class. And again, it's much easier said than done, but that's the approach. The approach is that you could have all the emotions, thoughts, and all that, but at the end of the day, it's about doing things and trying to get yourself as best as you can to do those things that are in line with those values. So how do we see this throughout the Torah? So this that was all Russ Harris talking. So where do we see that throughout our own Masorah? So I think it actually comes up a lot, because if you think about what the psukim talk about when it comes to simcha, besides for what we spoke about before, which is the simcha on the holidays, which again, that is the actual trying to feel good through physical things. But almost every other time the Torah mentions simcha, it's not talking about that momentary joy. It's talking about something deeper. So if you look at, and these are psukim that are probably familiar to you. So first in Devarim, and Chav Ches, Mem Zayin. So in the middle of the Tochacha, when Hashem is telling us why we got kicked out of Eretz Yisrael, or why we will get kicked out of Eretz Yisrael, so the Pasuk famously says, Tachas Hashelo Avadata as Hashem Lokecha, B'Simcha B'Tov Levav Meirov Kol. Because you didn't serve Hashem B'Simcha. So the service of Hashem is supposed to be B'Simcha. And then of course we have a famous Pasuk, David HaMelech says in Tehillim, Kuf Pasuk Beis, Ivdu Es Hashem B'Simcha, Ba'olafan of Birnana. So that through the avoda, through the actual work that we have to do by serving Hashem, that's ultimately what brings simcha. Why? Because if we go back to the premise that what brings this type of happiness, what brings the long-standing happiness of the satisfaction of living a meaningful life, it's doing things that are meaningful. So when we have that mindset of serving Hashem, and we recognize that everything that we do to serve Hashem is inherently meaningful because it's fulfilling our purpose in this world, that's what brings us to Simcha. And that's the Avodas Hashem b'Simcha. And a similar pasuk, but I think some of that brings out a slightly different point, is the pasuk in Devarim when it talks about the mitzvah of Bikurim. So every farmer's first fruit they would have to bring to the Beis Hamikdash, and they would have this declaration, and they would say, and the pasuk says that they have to be happy before Hashem. The pasuk says, "B'samachta b'chol hatov asher nasan lacha Hashem lakacha ulebeisecha atav v'halevi v'hager asher b'kabecha." That you have to be happy with all the good that Hashem has given you. So on the one hand, you could make a whole talk about how gratitude is a way of developing happiness, which definitely is also true. I should say that out loud. This is not the only way to achieve the Torah's approach to happiness, but I think that this is one route to develop this life satisfaction. So you could talk about gratitude here, that he brings the Bikurim and he's so grateful for everything Hashem gave him. But I think in line with what we're talking about, it's also about all the work that he or she put in. They worked hard, they worked the land, they have their first fruits, and now they could be b'samachta b'chol hatov, because they put in the work. They did all those actions that were meaningful to get them to a certain goal, and now they could have the simcha. And I think there are a lot of other sources that we could go through, but these are just three that kind of point out this idea that the sustainable simcha, not the momentary, you know, moments of feeling happy, but the sustainable satisfaction, living a happy life, really comes from the work and doing things that are value-based, doing things that are meaningful. And there's a few more sources for this. You may have heard the famous Rambam in Hilchos Yom Tov, Perek Vav Halacha Yud Ches, where the Rambam talks about how simcha could be enjoyable when it's just you, when you're just, you know, making sure that you're taken care of and that you're happy. But if you're not thinking about other people, says that if a person of a mishanol daltos chatzero, he locks his doors, v'ochel v'shosa hu uvana v'ishto, v'eino machil mashkelanim, someone who's just thinking about himself and is not giving to others, ulamare nefesh, people that are broken, einzu simchas mitzvah ala simchas kreso. So that's not real simcha of a mitzvah, that's just simcha of their own belly. So what the Rambam is really saying in one line is that you could transfer the first type of simcha, that feeling, that, you know, emotional pleasure, you could transfer that when you're just eating something good, you could turn that into a value-based simcha once you share that with others. If it's just you eating yourself, okay, so that's the mitzvah of simcha on Yontif, to feel good. You're eating your favorite piece of cheesecake, so you're enjoying. But the Rambam's saying you could transfer that type of simcha into the more long-lasting simcha, the value-based simcha, by connecting to the value of giving to others. And I think another really important aspect of this is to not just think of things that we want to add to our daily activities that are meaningful, to create that satisfaction in life, but it's also reflecting on things that we're already doing, and to think about this activity that I'm doing already every day actually has a lot of value, and I might not be feeling the satisfaction in it because I haven't yet connected that value to the behavior. And I think this is brought out in a beautiful idea that I think is relevant to tonight, Mishnechas Adar, about a Gemara that talks about the experience that the Jewish people had after the salvation during the times of Mordechai and Esther. So the Gemara in Megillah points out, so the Pasuk in Esther, Ches Ted Zayin, says, LaYehudim Haisa Ora V'Simcha V'Sasam V'Yikar, that after the salvation, the Jewish people had light and they had happiness, sason, gladness, yikar, joy. So Amar Rav Yehuda says, Ora Zu Torah. The light that they experienced after the salvation, that was really Torah. And then it goes through a Pasuk for that. And the Simcha, that's really referring to Yontif. That's really referring to the holidays. The joy, that's really referring to Mila, the mitzvah of Bris Mila. And Yikar, that's referring to Tzfilin. Okay, so we're not going to get into why each of those words refer to each of those mitzvahs. But the Sfas Emes, the second Ger Rebbe, a great, great Hasidic master, so he asked the obvious question. He says that why after the salvation during the times of Mordechai and Esther, now the Jews have Ora, Simcha, Sasan, V'Yikar. Now they have Torah, as the Gemara is saying. Now they have Torah, now they have Yontif, now they have Mila, now they have Tefillin. They had it all along. Ever since Har Sinai, they've had these mitzvos. So why now all of a sudden did they have these mitzvos? So the Sfas Emes says, no, the point is that they had Torah, but they didn't see the aura of Torah. They didn't appreciate the light of Torah. They had Yontif, but they were going through the motions of Yontif. They didn't appreciate the Simcha of Yontif. They had Mila, but didn't appreciate the Sason. They had Yikar, they had Tefillin, but they didn't appreciate the Yikar of Tefillin. So I think it's not only, if we're thinking about how to develop a sustainable Simcha in life, it's not just about trying to add things and think about what could I do every day that will be meaningful and value-based, but it's also as simple as thinking about the things that we're already doing. And it's not just mitzvos. It could be things that we're doing in school just for, you know, academic, you know, purposes. It could be connecting to each other. I mean, these are all mitzvos also. But I guess my point is it's not only a clear-cut 613 mitzvah. It could be anything that we're doing that is valuable, that we might not realize is valuable. Sometimes that itself could add more meaning and more happiness to our everyday life. So just to kind of summarize what we went through, and again, there's, you know, a lot that we could really flesh out, and if anyone has questions, I'm happy to take them. But I think what's clear is that the Torah really teaches that there are two types of simcha. On the one hand, there's this emotional simcha, which is the feeling of happiness, the same way we have a feeling of sadness, anger, etc. And that's through, you know, means of physical pleasures that the Torah tells us to engage in at certain times of the year, to create that emotion. But then, similar to what the happiness trap is teaching, that there's also the state of being of Simcha. It's not just about the emotion of Simcha. And what's the state of being of Simcha? So that's embracing all emotions, allowing emotions to be there, to not forcing ourselves to have to feel happy all the time, and engaging in meaningful, value-based behaviors, and to try to really think about what could we do to add to things that are in line with our values. And I just want to point out that even just having this week of self-care, that's all value-based, right? The paint night last night, That's a value-based activity, not just for creativity, but it's to be able to connect to self-care. So to really think about what are my values and what behaviors could I add that are in line with those values, and then also connecting to what we're already doing. To think about what am I already doing every day? Tefillah, learning Torah, getting together with friends as much as we can these days. And how do I realize that these things are much more valuable than I maybe even thinking, that they really are connected to a lot of values that I have. And just to end with one more idea on Purim, so we know that a real crux of the story, a real turning point of the story of Megillas Esther, is when Mordechai is trying to convince Esther that she has to go in front of the king, she has to say something to Achashverosh, she has to call in Haman for a meeting, she can't allow this decree of destroying the Jewish people to actually happen. And as we know, Mordechai says, "Im hacharish tacharishi beis hazos." If you're silent here, then it's going to happen anyway. But this is your moment, Esther. This is your moment to make it happen. And I think part of what the message is of Esther going in and setting up this meeting is that Esther knew the right thing to do. The value that she wanted to connect with is saving Klal Yisrael and preventing a terrible thing from happening. So despite the anxiety she felt, despite all the thoughts she may have had, all the emotions she may have had, she pulled that balloon in and she went into Achashverosh's chamber and said, "We have to meet." Right? So she pulled in those emotions. She didn't try to push them away, but she still allowed herself to do what was right, which ultimately led to the Yeshua, to the saving of Klal Yisrael. So as we start, Mishnechnas Adar Marav B'Simcha. So first of all, to remember that we could accept different emotions. We don't have to put pressure on ourselves to always feel that happiness, but we should definitely try to connect to this state of mind of happiness through doing meaningful activities. And maybe during the month of Adar, it's very interesting. The Gemara doesn't tell us many things that we should be doing specifically during Adar. The Halacha doesn't say you should be doing X, Y, and Z in order to be marbe b'simcha during this month of Adar. But perhaps as we go into the month of Adar, we could really think about what are our values, and what are more activities that we could do that are in line with those values to really have a true state of simcha. So with that, if anyone has any questions, I'm happy to take. But I really appreciate everyone's attention, and everyone should have a great Adar.
Thank you, Rabbi Gortz. That was awesome.
You're welcome, Mr. Maskowitz. Thank you for having me.
Happy Adar, everyone.